This is Triad Arts Weekend, your one-stop listening shop for what's going on in the wonderful world of art right here in the Piedmont. I'm David Ford, and I'll be back shortly with the Be Kin Band. They've got a debut album release party coming up. But first, technical producer Eddie Garcia has this insider's look at a music festival getting set to debut later this month.
Festival season is upon us. With no shortage of incredible music and film experiences to be had in and around the Triad, my guests today represent the newest kids on the festival block. Dash Pop is a two-day music festival taking place on March 27th and 28th. The festival promises an exciting blend of hip-hop, rock, and traditional music from national and local acts. One of the things that sets this festival apart is its ambition to not only present great music, but to educate college students on the finer points of downtown Winston-Salem. It's also focused on being culturally inclusive and being an affordable entertainment option. You'll find information on Dash Pop tickets at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend.
My name's Kent Garrett. I'm a junior here at Wake Forest. I'm part of the booking and logistics team.
I'm Nathan Bedsole. I'm one of two graduate assistants for the Dash Pop class.
Through the Dash Pop social media campaign, I've seen the hashtag, what is Dash Pop? So that begs the question, what is Dash Pop?
One of the fun things about the class has been it being a first year festival. We've been trying to create this sense of ownership with the students in the class, so it's treated as less of an assignment to accomplish and more of something that people tackle and take on as if they were an owner rather than being simply an employee. But because there's no precedent for Dash Pop specifically, we've almost been perceiving the thing as we've been creating it. So what is Dash Pop? It was equal parts kind of a fun way to get the name Dash Pop out in the community and also kind of a self-conscious check for ourselves. Like, what are we doing? What do we want this to be? What can it be?
So let's take a step back for listeners that might not know that this is involved in a class. You said that the class was doing this. How is a music festival a class?
The interesting thing about a music festival is there's so many different yet intertwined parts that are needed to make the festival happen. Everything from getting publicity and promoting the festival to booking the acts to getting small things such as printing a booklet, printing posters. Those are the types of things that make a music festival happen. And when you look at an average class size at Wake Forest, which is about 30 students, that's normally how many people it takes to run any medium-sized music festival or any music festival that goes over 2 days. I was extremely interested by the course offering. First and foremost, I thought this was a great opportunity for students at Wake Forest because this sounded like a truly collaborative group effort type of class. Our professor, Lynn Neighbors, used to offer a course similar to this where they hypothetically plan a music festival. And he figured if we've been hypothetically planning festivals in Winston-Salem for years now, we might as well come through by planning a real one.
So a music festival is a large undertaking. What are the first steps you have to take, organizationally speaking?
We started at the conceptual level with the students. We wanted to, in order to build that sense of ownership, that sense of responsibility and commitment to a project, we wanted to make sure the project felt like the students in the class played a part in it from the very beginning. And we spent a lot of time in class spitballing indoor, outdoor, what dates are going to work, what dates don't have weather restrictions, what dates don't conflict with other events in the area, what dates don't conflict with the university calendar. What bands can we get on certain times? You know, just like from the ground up, we started taking everyone's contributions and like asking everyone these questions and getting them to think about if they had a festival that was theirs, what would it look like?
What are the goals of Dash Pop outside of the goals for the students involved in organizing it? What are the larger, maybe community-driven goals?
Lynn, our professor, had a lot of, I think social goals would be the word he would use. And a big one was to just create a festival that was very financially attainable, located centrally, so many different communities in Winston-Salem could get access to it, and content-wise looked like Winston-Salem.
So So let's talk about some of the artists involved, starting with Grammy winner and Winston-Salem resident Ninth Wonder, who's produced Beyonce, Jay-Z, Drake, Mary J. Blige. How did you connect with him, and what is he bringing to Dash Pop?
So Ninth lives in Raleigh now, but he's here quite often. One of our students had the idea, in line with our social goals, why not try to get Ninth Wonder? Like, Ninth Wonder and his record label, Jamla, like, what better represents what Dash Pop was trying to do? We reached out through a local DJ who I knew had connections with him and the work he does. Me and Len had a meeting with him. It being a first-year festival, we had to just sell Ninth on the idea of what we wanted to do with Dash Pop. And he was on board. And he's been a great partner all along. It's been a really exciting time for his record label, Jamla. Our night one headliner, Rhapsody, she was just featured on Kendrick Lamar's new record. So she's just blowing up right now. Couldn't have imagined more convenient timing for Dash Pop.
That's really
up.
Good timing with the album just coming out.
Ain't no need, no hurry, ain't. It's hard to be political, can't say what's on your brain. Careers come quick, it's just as fast to bury them. But I chose to give a damn and box for you like pictures on Instagram.
I think one of the things that's most exciting about having Ninth Wonder being involved with Dash Pop is Ninth Wonder specifically has had such a focus on incorporating music with scholarship in terms of student scholarship. With his teachings over at North Carolina Central University and then being a visiting professor at both Duke and Harvard, Ninth Wonder is one of the few active musicians that are highly involved in higher education.
And as far as local bands, you have some local and or North Carolina bands on the bill. Give listeners an idea of who can they expect from the local scene.
Boca Negra, Spirit System, Gully, Bear the Traveler, I Anomaly, Fury and the Sound. Plenty of local bands that people are excited about seeing around and throwing them all together for a weekend. Coupled with the headliners we've got, it adds this sort of community feel while still pushing beyond just another weekend of music. So we're just really excited about it.
And you're bringing in some other touring bands as well?
Yeah, one we're really stoked about is Good Grief. I think they're based out of California now, originally from Florida. This twin girl pop folk duo, cello, guitar.
They've played the Garage before. They've been in Winston before.
Yeah, I think this is their third time back. Tucker at the Garage was really excited when we realized that we would be able to accommodate this booking within Dash Pop.
Hello!
The Bastards of Fate is a band I am very familiar with. My old band used to play with them a lot. How did you guys get them involved?
The Bastards are actually on This Will Be Our Summer Records, a record label run by Len Neighbors, our professor. So they were really excited to come down and play in Winston again. They played at the Warehouse before. They put on an incredible and exciting live show. They're going to be at the Ziggy's Tavern, so that should be a really good time.
So Dash Pop is the newest music festival in Winston, but it's not the first festival in Winston. FuzzFest has been successful and growing the past couple of years. Did any of their successes make you feel like the ground was more fertile for more music and more festivals in the area?
Absolutely. I've known Philip, Mr. FuzzFest, for a number of years now. I have been to or played at every FuzzFest that has ever happened. It's one of my favorite things that happens in Winston. So seeing that take off to the level that they've taken it to, yeah, Winston looks more than ever really willing and eager to embrace these sorts of events in town. And when the opportunity arose to collide these two worlds that I live in, one being the graduate assistant and alum from Wake Forest, and one being the downtown service employee that plays in bands, I was really interested to see if we could take these communities and create an event that responsibly played to both their interests. So it's been an exciting process for me personally in that regard. But yeah, to answer your question, absolutely. The success of FuzzFest is good for everyone involved with arts and music in town.
If Wake Forest students were better aware of some of the very creative and interesting art outlets in downtown Winston, I think that the Wake Forest community would be more involved downtown. It's a great place, and we're hoping that this is a springboard to get more students involved down in the area, whether it be at the art galleries like DeLurk and Artworks, or just attending the garage more often. If we get 10 or 15 students that are more involved in the community, that's a major victory for us.
Well, Kent and Nathan, thank you so much for coming in today, and I'm looking forward to Dash Pop.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nathan Bedsell and Kent Garrett. They're part of the group of arts entrepreneurship students who, under the guidance of Professor Len Neighbors, created Dash Pop. Dash Pop takes place in downtown Winston-Salem at multiple venues, including Ziggy's and The Garage, on March 27th and 28th. You'll find links to music, tickets, and full festival lineup at wfdd.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend.
Technical producer Eddie Garcia. I'm David Ford, and this is Triad Arts Weekend, your weekly arts magazine where you'll always find something cool to put on your calendar. While you can check out hundreds of local and visiting artists on our website 24/7, 365 at wfdd.org, and just click on Triad Arts Weekend. You'll also find podcasts of the show and links to all the artists and their work. We'll take a short break now, and then I'm back with the organic rock, lo-fi, folk hybrid that is Beacon Band. There's also Indian classical music performed live by a master sarod player and a group of dramatic Russian composers that'll grab your heartstrings and never let go next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend, where we bring our thriving art scene here in the Piedmont straight to you. I'm David Ford, and a little later on in the show, we'll be skipping on down to Studio A for a live lesson in Indian classical music. There's also Western classical music on the program with some of the most dramatic 20th century orchestral works ever composed, and it's all Russian. UNCSA conductor Christopher James Lees joins me to talk about these Russian fireworks just about 20 minutes from now. But first,
shadows of the gossip.
The Beacon Band is singer-songwriter guitarist Graham Byers, his brothers keyboardist Francois and drummer Ian, and mandolinist, percussionist, and vocalist Jill Erin Martin Byers, Ian's wife. The Byers were born and raised in Winston-Salem, and they believe in giving back to their community. You'll often find the Beacon Band donating their time, music, and equipment for charity shows at places like Second Harvest Food Bank, The Farm at the Children's Home, and the Artspace School. They've just completed recording their debut album, Shadows of the Gossip, and they'll be sharing it live at The Garage in Winston-Salem this weekend. But first, we look back at an early family favorite. This is King of the Philippines by Graham, the youngest of the nine Byers.
Like a king in the Philippines.
You know, the background of King in the Philippines, we were living in Portland, and at the time, Francois and I were both unemployed, living in a studio apartment, looking for a job, so it's easy to kind of hang on to pipe dreams, and my buddy Caleb was up there with us, who's another musician. So, you know, we were broke, had no money, and he had mentioned, he was like, you know, like in the Philippines, your dollar goes a really long way. And then we were kind of having a laugh about it, and I was like, well, let's put it to a tune. So him and I and Francois actually all collaborated on writing that one. I think it was sort of, yeah, it is theatrical. It almost became kind of anthemic for us because that was like our escapism from ramen noodles and, you know, cheap cigarettes was what it would be like to be a king in the Philippines.
Like a king in the Philippines. Hey.
I kind of grew up just improvising because the piano is such like a visual instrument. Black and white colors, and so it just felt like that's where I started playing the piano. Then I went to do formal training. So like the Beacon Band is sort of the best of both worlds of improvisation and having this kind of classical training where I can understand chord structures and stuff. And like in the beginning, while we're practicing, I'll play around with things until I find something that I like. So it just develops over time. In the beginning, it's being playful and just allowing to sound what it sounds like. Improvising at first, but then finding something solid that stays in the song.
Actually, I remember being in elementary school, and these kids could beat on the desk with their hands and knuckles, and I just thought it was the neatest, coolest thing ever. Profound beats, and I was just always drawn to that. And so it's never something I really pursued, but I would find myself beating on a desk or picking up a drum at a party. And when we decided to come together, they just said, why don't you play the drums? So I really just jumped into it with intent to do the best I could with it, and it's just taken from there. Like, with each song, I don't think I do the same beat twice for any recording, but it's all just with feeling.
I watched all these artists come in and out of Ziggy's, and then I took all that experience and just kind of rolled it up for a long time. And my most profound thing is that I get to do it now, too. You know, like, I spend the majority of my time working for other people, and anything from being a production runner to doing lighting, like all these aspects of production. But it's really nice if you're an artist and you work in that field to have that other minute to step over to the other side of the curtain, you know, and get to perform. So I think it's just all prepared me for what we're doing now.
The B-Kin Band, mandolinist, percussionist, and vocalist Jill Aaron Martin Byers, singer-songwriter, guitarist Graham Byers, and his brothers, keyboardist Francois and drummer Ian. This Saturday, March 21st, The Garage will play host for the Winston-Salem Family Band's debut album release show. The new album is titled Shadows of the Gossip, and the band will be taking a limited edition vinyl pre-order and offering vintage cassettes and t-shirts for sale. They'll also be sharing links to digital downloads for free. The B-Kin Band will be joined by tap dance phenom Julianne Harper, and Greensboro's Shiloh Hill will open up the evening beginning at 9 o'clock. In the meantime, here's a radio premiere of the track Goodness Sake from the new album. It features the tap dancing of Julianne Harper.
Thank you.
That's the Beekin Band with tap dancer Julianne Harper and the radio premiere of the song Goodness Sake from their new album Shadows of the Gossip. The Beekin Band is live at the Garage with their new CD Saturday night. Doors open at 8, and you'll find links to more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. In fact, you'll always find links to more on this show. Next, we provide a link to a centuries-old musical tradition that may be new to you, the beautiful vocal-sounding Indian string instrument known as sarod. Indian classical music is a powerful tradition that's been passed down generation after generation for thousands of years. Next week, Triad audiences will have the unique opportunity to experience this music from the tradition of one of India's most revered musicians, the late Dr. Lakshmikant Doshi. Dr. Doshi was the guru of sarod master Garang Doshi, his son, who will perform live in concert in Brendel Recital Hall on Saturday, March 28th. The performance is titled Peace 2015, Garang Doshi Live in Concert on sarod. Tabla players Sandeep Hatangadi and Rajen Sukadia will also perform, and they'll be joined by several of Garang's outstanding sarod and sitar students. In 2012, Rajen, Garang, and sarod students Jim Robertson and Colin Alured visited Studio A with their instruments in hand, ready to share their musical journeys with all of us here on Triad Arts Weekend. I began by asking Colin, who's already a gifted guitarist, why he chose to study this technically and musically challenging Indian instrument, the sarod.
I think the sarod is a lot less familiar instrument than the sitar, and I had heard of the sitar, you know, mostly through the Beatles originally, and George Harrison, and then got into Ravi Shankar and in college. But the sarod I had not heard of until, I guess, about 4 years ago. And I was walking around Pilot Mountain, actually, and had been to India a few months beforehand. And Garang came walking by with his family. And so I'd picked up some Hindi in India and said, "Aap kaise hai?" And we'd started talking, and said, "Oh, I teach Indian classical music, and I play the sarod," and I didn't know what that was, and he gave me his card, and I actually went on YouTube and started watching the sarod, and I just fell in love with it. It was just a fascinating sound, and I knew that I wanted to play it, and still had the card on my desk, and called Garang, and of course, where do you get a sarod? Where do you practice the sarod? And he was very, very kind and said, "My instrument is your instrument. Anytime you want to come here and practice on this instrument, feel free to do that." And so that was really what drew me to it, was his warmth and the fact that he was sort of a gateway into this instrument, because I do feel the sarod is such a specialized instrument that without a teacher, it would be very difficult to even enter into playing it at all.
It's funny you mentioned Ravi Shankar, because I believe Dr. Lakshmikant Doshi, his guru was Ravi Shankar's guru.
Yes, from the same karana, from the same lineage.
From the same lineage. How about you, Jim, coming into this beautiful yet unusual instrument, the sarod, to say the least?
I was familiar with the sarod, and I spent entirely too much time cruising around on eBay, and I found an inexpensive sarod, which I purchased. It was strung totally wrong with wound strings like guitar strings, and I knew that one needs to slide one's fingers, and I said, "Well, those will never do," so I started doing internet research, and I discovered the proper string gauges and things of that nature, and then I started playing around with it. I found the proper notes for tuning it, and I started trying to figure out what to do with this. Now, I have been playing stringed instruments for 45 years or more, and I could not figure out the right way to do this. So I did some more internet research and came up with a teacher in Northern Virginia who had been to the Ali Akbar College in California and had come back and was teaching in Northern Virginia, and I came upon Garang Doshi, who seemed to me to be much more of what I would call the real thing.
Through all the effort, all the rehearsals and lessons with your guru, Garang Doshi, you've reached a certain level. Tell me about the joy aspect of this now, Jim. When you're playing and you're feeling like you're in the moment, could you share that feeling with us?
It's hard to describe. The first time I played an Indian music concert with this ensemble or with this music school. I played violin because I hadn't been playing sarod long enough, and the time for the concert came along, and our guru, Dr. Lakshmikant Doshi, was in the country, and I got to study some with him as well as work with him on the orchestra. When I learned my part well enough to play my part, and I performed in that concert, I had one of the most... It was an elevated, gratified feeling when I got through. It was actually one of the high points of my playing music for 40 plus years. It was just amazing. I was floating. I didn't actually walk up the steps to leave the Brendel Recital Hall. I actually floated up to the lobby and up to my car, and my eyelids were peeled back all the way back to Amherst County, Virginia. It was remarkable. It's the feeling that musicians look for. There's some place that you look for when, as you said, in the moment, when things just lock in perfectly well, and when they do, there's nothing else like it.
Well, that doesn't sound like any fun at all.
Not a bit.
Oh, boy. So, Colin, I mean, you both are seasoned musicians. You've been playing for years, but playing Indian classical music on the sarod in performance, what are you getting out of it?
For me, it taps into a feeling of the sacred. There's a tradition in India that they call Nada Yoga, and the yoga of sound, and also my interest in meditation, and it has sort of a philosophy of connecting one's self to the divine through sound, and that seems to be sort of an inherent quality of this music that really appeals to me and that I really feel when I play it or listen to it.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you all coming here and also bringing in three sarods and the tabla and the drone and all the equipment. Thank you very much. And we're going to hear the Malkaush Rag and performed here live in Studio A with Colin Alured performing sarod and Jim Robertson sarod and their guru Garung Doshi performing sarod as well and the tabla Rajen Sukhadia. This is the Malkaush Rag. My thanks to sarod master Garang Doshi, who received his musical training from his guru and father, the late Dr. Lakshmikant Doshi. Thanks also to tabla player Rajen Sukhadia and Garang's sarod students, Colin Alured and Jim Robertson. Peace 2015, Garang Doshi live in concert, is Saturday night, March 28th at 7 o'clock in Brendel Recital Hall on the Wake Forest University campus. Tickets are just $7, $5 for seniors and children, and Wake Forest students get in for free. A Pandit Dr. Lakshmikant S. Doshi Award presentation ceremony will follow the concert, and you'll find links to more information on our website, wfdd.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. It's time yet again for a short intermission before we return with more incredible music for you, but of a very different nature. From the often soft-spoken, contemplative sounds of Indian classical music to an entire concert of Russian fireworks, UNC School of the Arts Symphony Orchestra music director Christopher James Lees knows a thing or two or three about the great Russian masters Rachmaninoff, Shostakovich, and Mussorgsky, and he's anxious to share next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. This is Triad Arts Weekend. Life comes at you fast. There's lots to do, especially when it comes to arts events. And by golly, we're here to help. Bethany Chafe and Eddie Garcia and I will share our Triad to-dos with you here just about 10 minutes from now. But in the meantime, there's even more great music to cover. This week, the UNC School of the Arts Symphony Orchestra, under the baton of music director Christopher James Lees, shot off a concert of Russian fireworks. On the program Thursday night in the Stevens Center was the Symphony No. 5 by Shostakovich, Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto with outstanding Russian pianist Dmitry Steinberg, and the Prelude to Kovanshchina by Modest Mussorgsky. Christopher James Lees is one of the world's hottest young conductors. The 2013 winner of the Aspen Conducting Prize is also only the second American Gustavo Dudamel Conducting Fellow with the Los Angeles Philharmonic. Christopher made his debut with that orchestra in April of 2013 and returned for concerts there just last month. Also last month, Christopher was busy leading the UNC School of the Arts Symphony Orchestra in Winston-Salem and putting the finishing touches on this wonderful all-Russian program, beginning with the mysterious opener, Modest Mussorgsky's Prelude to Kovanshchina.
He knew how to take the ethos of the folk song out of the peasant lands and turn it into this symphonic masterpiece. Kovanshchina is a beautiful prelude that evokes sunrise over the Moscow River. And it's so, in some ways, contradictory because the opera is actually quite brutal, related to the struggle of power between Peter the Great and the political foes that he would encounter and eventually crush. But you don't hear any of that in the prelude. The prelude is sweetness and light and sunrise and birds and church bells tolling. It's a really serene opening to a rather gruesome story.
There's some virtuosic writing for all of the woodwinds, transparent writing for strings, lots of opportunities for rubato, really expressive playing. Not the easiest work for a young orchestra. How are they handling it?
The orchestra is really taking to this piece partially because it's so delicate. In order to paint a sunrise, you have to get just the right balance of light and shadow. And if you don't find the right brush or the right combination of colors as you're trying to make this thing grow, you really get more of a sunset or high noon, but you don't get that glow on the horizon of the water. Technically, it's tricky because there's not a lot of unison moments. It's very intricately held together. It starts with a viola solo, then a woodwind call, and only after about 3.5 minutes does it really pick up its steam and start to have its own momentum.
It's a great program, Christopher, and really well balanced. And I love the next work in the program. You get another great melodist in Rachmaninoff, Sergei Rachmaninoff, his second piano concerto. I've always loved the opening of this piece. It's unusual, the chordal kind of bell-like ringing of the piano, and then the melodic entrance presented by the strings, again, is so Russian sounding. You feel like you've got an old Russian peasant song right in front of you there.
Oftentimes you hear Rachmaninoff and you think, this guy must have lived at the turn of the 20th century. He must have been coming out of this great romantic tradition. And then you realize that so many of his pieces that we know and love are actually early to mid 20th century. So he's as much a conservative modern composer in his time as anybody else was.
The second piano concerto has an interesting history, partially because Rachmaninoff was in such a dark place when he wrote it. He had just come off the premiere of his first symphony. He was depressed. He couldn't write. He had writer's block. He went to a therapist. He went to a hypnotist to try and get the juices flowing again. And when I hear this opening, I think that must have been him in the dark searching for the right harmony, for the right emotional impact of a chord. He wanders back and forth, and the only thing that's constant for those first so many bars is this low F that seems to both anchor and depress the soloist. And from there, it then takes off, like the first eight bars are his prison, and the rest of the music is what is possible when he's freed.
And what comes out of that freedom, that some of the most romantic melodies ever written, and boy, he had a knack for that. And you've got Dmitri Steinberg on the piano to bring out these just wonderful, transcendent melodies. Just a terrific performer.
I would be lying if I said that part of the appeal wasn't his heritage. I'm sure he drank something in the water as a child, which gave him some extraordinary insight into playing this music. It helps that Dmitri is such a fantastic musician, and by extension, a fantastic Russian musician. And we've had one rehearsal with him so far, and more in leading up to the concert. And you get a sense that there's a kind of pianistic animal inside of him that gets unleashed when he sits down to play this piece. It is without question that he is one of the finest players of this repertoire, certainly in this area. And you get a palpable sense of that when you hear him slam down some of these monstrous chords at the keyboard.
Speaking of explosive and big finish, you get to turn it up to 11 with the final piece in the program. And looking at the Symphony No. 5 by Dmitri Shostakovich, another great Russian composer, and another one who coincidentally took a stab at Mussorgsky's Kovanchina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was another guy that tried his hand at it, and his orchestration didn't quite take off the way that Rimsky did. But
and I'm always wondering what makes his music so recognizable. Following Mussorgsky and Rimsky-Korsakov, he, in terms of orchestration, I mean, he just takes expression to a whole new level that's all his own, really.
He had a unique voice for combining the very best elements of Russian folk song without sounding like a Russian folk song. Borodin, Rimsky-Korsakov, Tchaikovsky, so many of them could write tunes that sounded like they came from the Caucasus. And Shostakovich was much more of a formalist. He wrote as an educated person, and this is what, in fact, got him in trouble, which made him write this Fifth Symphony in the first place. He had written an opera that was successful until Stalin went, and Stalin penned an editorial in the paper called the Pravda, where he said, "It is muddle, it is not music." And from then on, Shostakovich was blacklisted. And so this piece became his re-entry into high society, and not without a cost. You know, he would sleep by his door with his bags packed and his coat on in case he was arrested in the middle of the night and taken to prison so he wouldn't wake up his family. And what I think is interesting and so captivating about Shostakovich is he captures this darkness in the ways that he writes melodies. In some ways, it's very much like Bach in its organization and its counterpoint, and in other ways, it's instantly singable even as much as it is terrifying.
I love the way he puts together the first movement and the themes that he unifies, the seemingly very disparate themes, come together in a way that's, oh, yeah, that works perfectly.
They come together the way that you might see a town in Kansas collected into the same cyclone. There's a sense that all of these things belong with each other, But the maelstrom in which it finds itself is really overwhelming. And that, I wish I could say that that lets up, but in the moments that it releases, you feel completely spent and not invigorated the way that we do at the end of the Rachmaninoff, or certainly that some people felt at the end of the piece.
And a huge contrast in the slow movement marked Largo. Don't you love his writing for low strings? I mean, it started here, but then you hear it in the 10th symphony and in the violin concerto, mm-hmm. just this, the way he just sets up this cushiony bed and then things soar over the top of it.
For those of us who have family members who play low string instruments, my brother-in-law is the new principal bass of the Houston Symphony. And living that much time under low frequencies, you get a sense of roundness and warmth and richness. And I love upper strings too, but as you say, in this movement, you really get a sense of what's going on in the basement. In this movement, it's like we move from the chaos of the outside world into both a sacred space, a holy space, one inspired by Russian chant and Russian singing, these great basso profundos with immensely tall hats and immensely low voices singing these monotone and chant-like tunes. And you get the sense that it's equally tragic as it is holy. That it's a requiem of sorts for the people that were not so lucky as Shostakovich to make it through the oppression and the dark times of Soviet Russia. And from that sense, this is some of Shostakovich's most honest music. If the rest of the piece is partly to satisfy the censors, this is one of the ways that he walks into the hearts of the people for whom he's writing and says, "I am still with you, and this is a commemoration of your family."
UNC School of the Arts Symphony Orchestra Music Director Christopher James Lees. Russian Fireworks was Thursday night, March 19th, in the Stevens Center for the Performing Arts. The orchestra's next performance will be in May, where Christopher will take the ensemble from enormous, explosive Russian works to something smaller, musical miniatures. That's May 2nd in Crawford Hall on the UNCSA campus. I'm David Ford, and it's time for something completely different.
I'm Eddie Garcia, here with the rest of the Triad Arts team. How's it going, everybody?
Man, it's going great.
Good. How are you?
Good. Here for our Triad To Do, which is our weekly talk about arts events and other cultural curiosities that we didn't get to cover in depth for this week.
So, I like that. Cultural curiosities cover. You're an alliteration guy, too.
I am an alliteration guy.
Love it.
Maybe it's a crutch, maybe it's not. So here's what I have for this week. Tuesday, March 24th, Reanimator Records has a pretty cool experimental music event. If you're not familiar with Reanimator Records, it's a record store and performance space and kind of a local hangout of musicians, artists, and other weirdo types. They have drawing clubs. They do screenings.
Where are they?
It's located just behind Cranky's on Patterson, kind of in that corner where some other new businesses are popping up over there. Yeah.
And is that where you did the Bob Log interview?
That is, yeah. That's where I interviewed Bob Log, that magical musician, there go alliteration again, that performs in the mask and the crazy regalia and everything.
Well. Yeah.
So they're having an experimental music night on Tuesday, March 24th, and the headliner, so to speak, is Divine Circles out of Asheville, which is a solo violinist named Meg Mulhern, and she's been in a few different groups from that area. She's known for kind of exploring new sounds with the violin. She's using all kinds of electronics and effects pedals and does loops. She makes beats on the body of the violin and utilizes plucking and strumming and all different things. And I checked out some of the music and it sounds pretty cool. She was reviewed, you know, on the Pitchfork blog last year as well. So they have her track Midwest streaming there, and we'll post a link to the site. Playing with her is Gardner, who's a Chicago-based artist and musician who does soundscape work as well, and Lunar Creature, which is a duo from Asheville that Meg is also in, and then Greensboro's Knives of Spain, which is Gwen Young, who used to live here. She's describes herself as a 21st century Troberitz, which refers to the 12th and 13th century female troubadours who were the first to kind of compose secular music, secular and romantic music during that time. So she kind of considers herself a modern version of that. And I've seen, and I've also played with her before, and she, you know, switches between violin and like a modular synth and different beats, and she has a really nice voice, and she also incorporates looping that she's all, you know, made herself as well. So it'll be an evening of some interesting, different music at Reanimator Records. You know, if you're lucky, it'll sound like you're walking into a David Lynch soundtrack or something.
How about that?
I don't know if I want to do this.
Every once in a while, you might want to, right?
She's the Hildegard von Bingen of our day. See how about that obscure 12th century mystic references? You know, I do that. They just come out.
You've got it?
You've got it. Flaunt it. Yeah. Bethany, what do you got?
Well, also on Tuesday evening, March 24th, Margaret Atwood is coming to Greensboro as part of the Guilford College Bryan series. So this is a huge name in literature, not only in literature, but also in social activism and issues of technology and science fiction and just arts and innovation overall. So amazing woman. She will be speaking at the Greensboro Coliseum. And so that event begins at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available online.
You know she's big when an author is speaking in Greensboro Coliseum.
Yeah.
It's a lot of seats.
Exactly. And I wouldn't be surprised if she absolutely fills it. So Margaret Atwood, for those maybe who aren't familiar with her work, she's been shortlisted for the Booker Prize 5 times. She's won once. Most people are familiar with The Handmaid's Tale. Some of her other works are The Robber Bride, The Blind Assassin, The Year of the Flood. She also writes nonfiction as well. So she is going to be there on Tuesday evening. I recommend you make it there if possible, if you're not checking out Eddie's event. But in anticipation of Margaret's appearance on Tuesday night, this weekend, Guilford College is offering sort of a pre-event lecture by an English professor. Milen Dressler is going to be talking about Atwood's work on Sunday, and that's going to be from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. in the Leak Room of Duke Hall of Guilford College's campus. So that's an opportunity for you to find out a little bit more insight into Margaret Atwood and her work before you go and see the woman, the amazing woman herself on Tuesday night. So that's what I recommend.
Sounds great. Get a little entree into her work. I love that. A little lecture to set things up.
Exactly.
Well, we're going to have kind of a book sandwich, book ended by experimental music. Because for our listeners, we should say we hold our picks from each other. So we're finding out about these things for the very first time right now in real time. You can feel the excitement. And mine is deals with forecast music. Have you heard of Forecast?
Oh, yeah.
It's a really cool group of, actually it began in Brooklyn, and Eric Schwartz brought it to the Triad. He works at UNCSA as a composer and pianist with the dance program. It's an adventurous, not-for-profit new music group. And again, they're based here in the Triad, Winston-Salem, High Point, and Greensboro areas, with some of the world's finest composers and performers. And they all live right here in North Carolina, which is cool. And in full disclosure, among them is my wife, Jackie Carrasco, who plays violin occasionally with Forecast. Anyway, they've got a concert scheduled for April 10th. And I'll tell you why I'm giving you such a long leisure heads up on that one. This one's on the influence of Eastern music on contemporary composers. There's going to be a discussion lecture demo with a new ethnomusicologist at Wake Forest, faculty assistant professor of music, Elizabeth Clendinning. And I've been to a few of these. The concerts are always fun. It's really laid back. It's about an hour in length, so not too long. I mean, it's all new music, so it can be heavy at times. But it's in intimate venues. One was at Cranky's. I remember one. They did an all-Steve Reich program, which is cool. The venues kind of lend themselves to enjoying the music, having a sip of wine or beer with the concert, which is cool, and then just lounging afterwards to chat it up with the composers or musicians.
Cool.
It's a really neat, relaxed vibe. And the only problem with this upcoming concert on April 10th is the venue, one of my very favorite venues for listening to music live in Winston-Salem, has been for years, just announced that it's going to be closing its doors on March 31st.
Oh.
Can you guess where it is?
It is a community arts cafe.
Yep. It was just posted. Oh. Yeah. According to Community Arts Cafe co-owner Kathy Tedder, the business became unsustainable. And they looked for partnerships to hold it together. They decided to sell after opening their doors on 4th Street downtown. I guess it was 2009.
I'm sorry to hear that. And they've been really integrated in the arts community for a long time. It started off as the magazine. The Community Arts Cafe magazine was really nice, and they opened the space. So hopefully they'll move on to some good things.
I hope so. And in the meantime, Forecast needs a new venue in Winston-Salem due to their local Arts Council grant. So anything spring to mind, guys?
Have they played at the Garage before?
I don't think they have played at the
Was
Garage.
Was it at Cranky's? I remember I heard some audio from Forecast Music that you played for me that floored me. It was really great music. I guess maybe it was from the Cranky show, but
the
Garage. Reach out to Tucker.
That's a good, I have to chat with Tucker. And if you listening out there have an idea for a Winston-Salem venue, it's a shoestring operation. It's nonprofit, so low budget is important, but good quality sound is also important. So they've got a concert scheduled for April 10th, and you'll find links to Forecast Music where you can get the skinny and the latest goings on there at WFDD.org and click on Try It Arts Weekend. That's what I got.
Sounds great.
Always a pleasure, gang.
All right.
Have a good weekend.
So, it's been a musical afternoon on Try It Arts Weekend, from Dash Pop to Organic Rock, Sarod to Shostakovich, and so much more. Well, next Friday, the music continues to roll with singer-songwriter extraordinaire Molly McGinn and a visit from the one and only Mary Poppins, courtesy of Twin City Stage. Hope to see you then. But that's all for today's show. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia. Our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. And our intern is Elena Dolman. You can follow us on Twitter at Triad Arts Speak. And you'll find podcasts and archived episodes at WFDD.org. Just click on Triad Arts Weekend. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions about this show or any other Triad Arts Weekend program you've heard, please send them our way. Our email address is triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.